I'm delighted to welcome today very beautiful Kartika Tyagi, who is speaking to us from Switzerland, although you go between UAE and Switzerland. Very glamorous sounding life, Kartika.
Thank you so much, Elaine. Thanks a lot for having me. It's not as glamorous as it may sound. It involves a lot of work travel, a lot of coordination between the two offices. But then, yes, it's at the end, it's a good life, yes.
Marvellous. Okay, so you are a lawyer.
Yes, you are
a lawyer extraordinaire. So how would you describe your legal kind of bias, because I've interviewed lots of lawyers and I've been chief executive myself of a number of law firms. So how do you portray yourself? What type of lawyer would you say you are?
So I'm primarily, lawyer, not lawyer extraordinaire. I'm a regular, just a regular lawyer. I'm more of an international corporate commercial lawyer. And I deal with a lot of multi-jurisdictional corporate transactions. Plus, I also help businesses with day-to-day corporate matters. Apart from this, I deal with the principals of the businesses, handling their personal succession and estate planning. So structuring their businesses for succession purposes and their wealth and asset, which is usually scattered around the world. And so streamlining everything, sitting with their heirs, trusts, explaining to the families, what needs to be done in case of an unfortunate event. So this is also a big part of my practice. And yes, apart from that, of course, a lot of other matters, family law and banking, finance, all related to whatever you can count under the umbrella of corporate commercial law.
Interesting. And why two countries? What's the fascination with these two countries?
No, not really, actually. I'm sure Switzerland, with Switzerland, I have some past life connections. But I mean, that is a long story. But I moved to Switzerland in 2019, December, only because my husband moved to Switzerland in 2016. And this was more of a family reunion decision. And I was very, very apprehensive, which was, of course, natural because my work was pretty much still is pretty much on autopilot in UAE. It's a flourishing practice. You have clients, you have referrals, you have work coming to you. So taking that leap was not easy. However, back in 2019, when I was deciding and dilly-dallying between it, my colleague was very, very instrumental. He said, okay, just take the plunge. At max, you will not like it and come back. So that's the max that would happen. What worse can happen? I said, okay, fine, let me move. And when I moved, I realized it was actually a boon. It really did wonders. I am now sitting amongst all the bankers, trustee companies, and a lot of other asset managers. Because of our estate planning and asset management practice, it has actually really, really done wonders. So I am now very, very well connected to all these entities, all these professionals. Sitting here in Switzerland, and then, of course, I have to travel a lot back to UAE, but it's pretty manageable. I'm used to traveling. And yes, one good thing about moving to Switzerland and then going back to UAE is that you get more respect. Mm-hmm. So that's how the world works, right? So you're coming from a first world country and then you're going to the UAE. So the same clients look at you from a different perspective. That's a biggest joke right now in our practice as well. So in my office, it has really become the biggest joke that now we have more respect. We command more respect amongst the same clients, who used to work with us or who have been working with us for so many years. But yes, having said that, working between two jurisdictions has actually been a great decision. I mean, I'm now very happy with the decision that I took.
Excellent. And how does that relate to your personal life in terms of health and well-being? Because it sounds a lot of pressure, although looking at you, you're absolutely stunning and glowing and you seem on the surface, a picture of health. How does it affect you day to day?
Thank you very much. Yes, it initially did, because one, the timing was such that, it clashed exactly with the lockdown. So December 2019, and my last trip to UAE was February 2020. March, the world went into the lockdown, and for a year, almost a year, I went back again in December 2020 because UAE was open. Dubai had opened already its doors to everyone. But between February and December was actually a very tough time. You are in a new place, trying to adjust with so many things. Plus, you're not even able to meet people, right? So what do you do? The only way that I could connect to my office in UAE was, of course, either through calls or virtual, you know, Zoom calls. And this was also very new, if you remember, right? Mm-hmm. In those days, we were all struggling how to connect to Zoom. What happens, you know? Sometimes a network is bad, or people don't know, you know, how to really, you know, work this. So it was not a very easy time for me. But yes, I actually sat down, and I'm not joking. I actually sat down, took a piece of paper and pen, and made two columns. What's good in Dubai? What's good in Geneva? And what should I do here? What I like there? And I realized that both the places have their good and bad, and both are wonderful places. That's when I realized, okay, I need to settle down here now. Work-wise, I would be in both the places. It's not a very difficult thing to do. I do my yoga morning exercise every day. I do some meditation also in the morning. That keeps me grounded mentally. Physically, of course, it does take a little bit of toll, but I have learned to manage the time zones. And I like the fact that I'm getting to enjoy the best of both worlds. Switzerland's life it's beautiful. It's a fantastic lifestyle we have here. Quiet, more laid back. We can enjoy outdoors. And when I go to Dubai, then I get to enjoy the buzz, the liveliness of the city. So it's I look at it like that, I am actually, you know, one of the very few lucky people who get to enjoy both the sides. I have my friends there. I have my friends here. And I think I'm loving it. I have learned how to balance it.
Brilliant. Absolutely excellent to hear you talk about it with such passion as well, because so many people go to work and it becomes a drudge. It becomes a responsibility that they carry with them in a heavy way. So it's great that you've created a balance for your life. Apart from the corporate work that you do, Kartika, you also do a lot on educating men and also with domestic violence activism, if don't know if that's the right word or not, but tell us about your work in those areas.
Yes, so there are a few things that actually, you know, I mean, it kept adding as I worked along. So slowly and gradually, you know, I started getting matters related to family law. And that came along only because of the estate planning practice that I was already involved in. So people started coming to me with matters related to marriage, divorce, child custody. That's when I realized that actually in UAE, because that's where primarily I started working, domestic violence is a very, very big issue. And not just domestic violence, but apart from that, women in particular not being aware of what they should do or what their rights are or what their, how they should manage their finances is the biggest issue. So when they would come to me for a divorce or let's say they want to get out of a marriage, a bad marriage, nasty marriage, the first thing that would ask me is, okay, so what is it that, you know, I can do financially, whether I get something or not? Now, one thing that people are not aware of in UAE, that whatever is in whoever's name remains theirs. So if the husband owns a property, that will remain his. If the wife owns something, that will remain hers. And you are not going to believe, it was too shocking for me to know that in most of the cases, where husband and wife both are making money, most of the assets stand in husband's name. Most of the bank accounts are joined. So they don't know what to do. They would tell me, how do I get out of it? Because when I come out of it, I'm not going to get anything in my hand. And that's when, you know, it hits them. So many women would just decide to stay in that marriage just because of this factor. And that's when I realized, okay, it's very, very important to first make them realize that, you know, they should, if they're making money, even if they're not making money, they need to sort their finances first. Because I think, and it may not be wrong to say that most of the times women are stuck in nasty and bad marriages or bad relationships because they do not see themselves being completely, you know, stable financially if they're out of that wedlock. And that's the biggest hurdle for them to cross. You know, it's not children. Children become an excuse most of the times. Mm-hmm. They're most of the times an excuse. But the biggest reason is that they do not see themselves being financially stable if they're out of that marriage. And I started educating them on, you know, taking care and taking control of their assets, taking control of their finances and not leaving everything to their spouses. And this was more important to do in case of marriages, which are fine, like, you know, which are okay, which are happy. Because when everything is good, everything is nice, glorious, you do not realize what can happen. You do not even think about what can happen, what could happen to you. So those are the kind of women who I work with more. Of course, I do still help women, you know, who are in distress. And I think my telephone number is making rounds in some Facebook groups where I randomly get a call, SOS call, and they would say, okay, I need help. How do you get my number? I got it from some person here, there. But that is, you know, that is a fulfilling part of my practice. I usually help them pro bono. If they need advice, I just help them. You know, I tell them what to do, what authorities they should approach, what is the procedure, how can they get custody of their children. So most of the times, these are distress calls, and these women, of course, do not have any money to pay me as well, which I don't mind. That's why I work with them pro bono. And understand the situation, and the gratitude that I get from them afterwards is, I think, the best part of it. Mm. So yes, this is that fulfilling part of my practice.
Fabulous, and that's lovely to hear, because so much of the way we're conditioned, you know, we've got to be the biggest, the fastest, the best, the most money, you know, and that's not how life is it, on a day-to-day basis. And so many people, you know, you hear stories of people who've got everything and yet they're as miserable, you know, as anything, because they're not fulfilled as individuals. So it's lovely that you've created the balance. You seem to have everything completely under control. So fingers crossed, and long may that continue. So how did you get to be a lawyer? I mean, did you grow up always wanting to be a lawyer? What happened in between childhood and now?
So I was just born into the profession, let's put it like that. So it's a family of lawyers. And I saw everyone taking this profession one by one, from my father to his brothers, his sisters, husbands, and then my cousins. So honestly speaking, this was not my first choice, because I was seeing this so much around myself that I just did not want to do this. This was my last choice, to be honest. But my father always wanted me to, of course, take up law, and he wanted my sister as well to take up law. I ended up doing it, and 3 years of my legal education, I constantly worked with him as well, realizing he does a lot of criminal practice as well, my father. And, you know, criminal practice is not easy. You have to really separate yourself out from the matter, subject matter, and then look at it objectively as a third person, which is very difficult. He does it brilliantly. I couldn't see myself doing it. However, I learned the civil side of litigation and a lot from him. And after I finished, after I graduated, I did not work with him. I chose to work with a different lawyer, with a different firm. And that's where I got my corporate commercial training from my boss, first boss. And now I enjoy, I love working as a lawyer. I think the only drawback probably is that you need to keep studying all the time. you know it, right? So
yes. Yeah.
It's like you never stop studying, right?
No, so every day, yeah. I have this saying, every day is a school day. And with the way the natural health is going and all these wonderful modalities that are coming out, you know, natural healing modalities that have been around for years and years and years that have suddenly popped up as new kids on the block, we need to know about them. We need to learn about them. So every day is keeping not even ahead of the curve, is keeping abreast of things, because there's so much.
100%. So if only I knew that, probably I would still say no to it. But now I'm into it, so I have no other option but to, of course, like, you know, I mean, yes, you keep studying all the time. You have to know about new regulations, new laws, new rules. And with the kind of work that I do, it's very vast. Like, you know, so there are a lot of things that I need to know. So I'm not like a super specialized lawyer, like a lot of lawyers are. So it's for me to really know and know everything that is happening in every single industry that I'm working with is really very difficult. But yes, that's a part of our work, and I'm sure we all manage to do it some or the other way.
And not only that, you've got two jurisdictions.
Yes, yes. So now it is even, in fact, you know, because of the estate planning and international corporate work that I do, you know, so many times I have to study, if there is a multi-jurisdictional transaction, then I have to study the corporate law of another country. More or less, they are same. They're not very different from each other. But then, yes, their practical applications, implementation are very different. And working with local councils, you know, you need to, of course, you get to know a lot of new things. But then, yes, it's a lot of new laws, regulations, a lot of studying that I have to do. So yes, not easy. But then, yes, I mean, you know, when it's part of your work, you do understand and you do learn to keep up with it.
Yeah, absolutely. And how do you spend your time when you're not working? Do you have any time that when you're not working or traveling?
Yes, sometimes. Yes, I do. I do. So music is probably my first love. So I love listening to music from every part of the world. So that is something that keeps me actually sane. It is with me 24/7. So even when I'm working, my earbuds are on with some of the other music. Then I also follow a few podcasts. One of them is Dr. Huberman. I'm sure you know him. He's like the most loved doctor on the internet. So he is a neuroscientist and a professor at Stanford University. And I follow his podcast. He talks a lot about a lot of health issues. Podcasts are long. His podcasts in particular are long, about 2 hours. So I do listen to them in breaks and on hyperspeed. But I enjoy them. I love listening to his podcast. There are so many new things that I have learned. And I do follow him religiously. So yeah, you can really call me a Hubermanian.
Hubermanian. Very, very good. There's so many good people out there. So many.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, and I love to read and learn about new things. So this is what, you know, this is how I like to spend my time. Sometimes, yeah, I just want to sit and not even move a finger.
And that is perfectly fine. And I think so many of us don't do that often enough. That's something that I've learned as I've got older. And I have this saying, the older I get, the less I do, the more I achieve. Because I'm not chasing after anything. You know, my whole life has been, you know, the biggest, the best, the fastest, etc. In fact, I wrote an article recently from From designer to wheelbarrow. And if you'd asked me 10 years ago what was the most important things in my life, it would be my sports cars, my designer clothes, and my dishwasher. Now I've got the car I drive is appropriate for where I live. I live in a rural area. And, you know, having a sports car is totally not appropriate. Designer clothes, well, you know, there's nothing here to go designerish about in the life that I now lead. And I don't have a dishwasher, but I have a pair of rubber gloves. So, you know, it's life, you know, we go through different chapters, don't we? So there we go. So in terms of your the work that you're doing with the marriage type of things, you've mentioned about women not understanding what their rights are and what they can do and so on and so forth, and they kind of had this wake-up call when they're in a situation that they, you know, don't know where to turn to. So it's wonderful that you're there. What guidance would you give to anybody listening to this call, you know, if they wake up and realize that, you know, the marriage is absolutely not going anywhere? What should they do?
So first and foremost, that I tell them is that before they even take that step, first, of course, you know, once they realize that, yes, they need an exit from this marriage, the most important thing that they would need, of course, to survive, and that is the biggest reason as well, which is stopping them, you know, from exiting that marriage, is having their money, having something to survive. Once they exit, once they're out of it. So first thing that they need to figure out is where they stand financially, whether they have anything in hand or not. If they do not have, then they need to work towards it. And I usually tell them that if the situation is not that bad, I know it may not sound of a very great advice, but I do tell them that, listen, if the situation is something that you can handle for some time, then please build on your finances first and then take the next step. Then move to step two, which is, yes, getting out of that marriage. So set a timeline. Give yourself, let's say, 5 to 6 months to sort everything out in order, or maybe a year, and then move to step two, which is, yes, getting out of that marriage. But if you feel that, yes, it's not going to happen, it's not really, you know, I mean, it's dire straits now, then yes, first thing is, I also work with I'm connected with a lot of therapists and psychologists and psychiatrists. So if I feel the need that my client needs to meet one of these professionals, then I do advise them and suggest them that, okay, first get in touch with a therapist, get in touch with a psychiatrist. Maybe you need help first there. Once that is sorted, then again, back to step one, which is sorting your financials. And if there is violence, that then of course, I know what has to be done. So walk to the authorities straight away, file a complaint, lodge a complaint, and exit to a safe place. And then we will figure out what is to be done. Because most important is your safety. If you're not safe, then of course you cannot do anything else. So this has happened with a lot of women, where I know that women, actually they don't even realize that they have been abused or they're hurt. They would tell me that, oh, there's no mark. I don't think, if I go to the police, they would not believe me. I can't see anything, which is so weird, which is, you know, I mean, which actually, you know, I mean, it makes me sad to see that they don't even realize how bad the situation is, because they are so attuned to that life. They think it's normal, right? No, he slapped me, but there's no mark. Mm-hmm. It's not a very hard slap. So to make them understand, and I'm very harsh and very tough with these kind of clients, I do tell them that, listen, if you say that again, then please don't even call me back for any advice. Then it's end here, you know, I mean, end of everything. Only call me if you have gone to a police station and registered your complaint. Then you tell me what is the status. Then we will talk further. And this works in most of the cases. Sometimes I don't get any call back, and I realize that these women are fine with their situation, but they need someone else to help. Because see, I'm not a counselor myself. I can't do more than a certain thing. I do connect them to counselors. I do connect them to therapists. But if that also doesn't work, then yes, it's out of our hands. So these are various suggestions. There's various things and the various ways that I deal with such women. Of course, if you are if someone realizes right now that yes, they need to look at their marriage, where it stands now. First thing, of course, is to sort their finances. If they feel that yes, they are absolutely okay to walk out, then walk out today. Don't make children your excuse. Mm-hmm. Don't make anything else also your excuse. Just walk out. It's easier, you know, and you will be in a happier place.
Absolutely. I can identify with everything that you said there. My second husband, it took me 3 years to get the courage to walk away. I'd get things thrown at me and all sorts of things, but again, no marks, no evidence. And meanwhile, you're portraying yourself as a, you know, successful businesswoman or, you know, whatever. And then one day he strangled me and left me for dead. So that was a pretty stark wake up call. And my daughter still remembers the night that the police came, and the marks were still around my neck when they arrived. And I'm a strong person. I'm very resilient, and I've been in the police myself, you know, so I know how to look after myself. But when you're dealing with strong men, alcohol is involved, you know, you can't rationalize with the situation, and you need to protect yourself. So yes, it's very difficult, but equally, so many women end up putting up with the situation. They think, oh, it's not so bad, what's the alternative? And if the alternative is too scary, they stay where they are. And you know, as you rightly say, you can't help people who can't help themselves or won't help themselves. And I have the same with healthcare. People expect me to reverse their cancers and so on. I can guide them how to do it because I've done it myself. I've recovered from stage four cancer in 3 months, but not everybody is prepared to put the work in. I can help and guide them as you can, but we can't do it for them, can we?
True, true. But you're a very strong woman. I have to, you know, I mean, you really deserve applause for doing what you did, and not just coming out of your marriage, but also fighting your cancer in 3 months, which is incredible.
It is. And I've, to me, it's just like, oh, well, I was strangled and left for dead, and I've got through stage four cancer and other things have happened. But to me, it's just like, well, it's what you do. You're presented with a problem and you deal with it, don't you? But the more I hear other people's situations, the more I realise I'm not, you know, I'm not an ordinary person, and I don't conform to things and so on. And clearly you're not either, the way that you conduct your life. So, yeah, I take my hat off to you. So how do people get a hold of you, Katika? What's your website? Or Instagram or whatever.
So yes, I am on LinkedIn. I am on Instagram. I do have a website and an email and a phone number. So if anyone needs any assistance with any type of work that I do, starting from, of course, corporate commercial legal work to family law, estate planning, succession, anything, I can be reached out on any of these channels.
Okay, and can you spell your name, because those listening on
the podcast,
and also you give your website details, please.
It's KARTEEKKA. I know it's a difficult spelling, and my last name is TYAGGI.
Katika Tiagi, it's a lovely, lovely name. And your website?
Website is, so there's a UAE website, which is under construction at the moment, but the other one, the Swiss one, is ktyagilaw.com. So it's ktyagilaw.com.
Marvelous. Thank you so much for your time today, Katika. It's been lovely speaking with you.
Thanks, Elaine. Thank you very much for having me. And yeah, again, I'm actually very glad to have met you, because you are, again, you know, an inspiring woman. I'm super, super happy to be connected to you.
Lovely. Thank you. Likewise.
Thank you so much.